Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name. Your name.
Signs of Life Radio. Sorry for the late start, folks, but we're here now. And thanks for joining us. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm here with my illustrious co-hosts, Tom Gould and Melissa Gould.
Hey, Bob.
Tom, it's I hear you're making great strides. You're looking great. You look even thinner and more handsome.
Oh, goodness.
I know you're getting stronger, so that's terrific news.
Thank you. Yep, 7 weeks out.
Yeah, great. As you know, folks, this is the show where we answer some of your questions. Some people have questions relating to the afterlife. Some want to share experiences. But if you want to join in, the number here is 888-627-6008. I know Tom didn't hold up my sign yet, but there he is. 888-627-6008. So some people did write in with some questions. Here we have Sheila wrote in, sometimes a medium will tell me things about me and say spirit is telling them, but most mediums seem to also read people. So can't they just be reading me? And how do you test this? Well, yes, they can just. Mediums, you know, are psychic. As for, I mean, the first part of your question, you said that sometimes the medium will tell me things about me and say spirit is telling them. So if they're connecting with somebody in spirit and they're giving you evidence so that you know that they really are talking to that spirit, and then that spirit through the medium is mentioning things that pertain to you, that would be mediumistic. But if a medium is just telling you about your future and not mentioning any particular discarnate in the spirit world, that we would think that would be psychic information. And how do we test for this? We discount psychic information when the mediums are evaluated, unless it's tied into somebody in spirit. So I hope that answers your question. Do you want to add anything to that?
That's pretty comprehensive. That's where it stands.
Okay.
Sometimes a discarnate will give you that kind of information, but that doesn't help you prove
right.
It is them.
And if you're the sitter hearing this, definitely say, who's telling you this? And if the medium cannot answer that question, either she or he is reading you psychically, or perhaps they need a little more experience.
Yeah. You know, I'm always amazed. I mean, just, I know where I live, I'm hearing all sorts of commercials on the radio. You probably are too, for these, you know, psychic hotlines, and they've been around for forever. Yeah. It's like booming business, you know, the owners of these companies, you know, but it always amazes me how many people live their lives based upon what they hear on these psychic hotlines, you know, and it's incredible. We talk about that. Even if somebody is gifted psychically and they catch glimpses of the future, you know, there may be many forks in the road. So many different futures and free will enters into that. So even if you're with a good practitioner, I wouldn't base any serious decisions based upon that, right?
I know some of the commercials I've heard, they say, best reading you ever got or your money back?
Yeah.
What are you comparing it to?
I know.
Crazy, crazy.
Somebody wrote in, it's a little long, I'll try and recap it. I'm very interested in how those who have, while in the physical bodies, done what anyone perceive as great evil. She's curious how they're received in the next world when they make their transition. For example, to define what I mean by great evil, those individuals who flew planes into the Twin Towers, blowing up the building in Oklahoma, and, you know, she goes on and on about, you know, these mass murderers and so forth. She said that, you know, the motives for these kinds of acts would be considered incomprehensible to many. It is my understanding, given many decades of study and the practice of mediumship, that even these extreme people are received with forgiveness and love. That is not only difficult to believe, but painfully difficult to swallow. And Misha wrote that in. Not the first time we've heard that, right, guys? I mean, people struggle and they want to know that there's some sort of justice in the next world. Well,
yeah, I think there is. I mean, yes, that's correct. Everyone is greeted with love. However, that doesn't mean they're getting off scot-free. There's a book that we've referred to often, Testimony of Light, that I remember reading, and it's a nun who wrote the book, and she had another nun who was on the other side and was channeling stories back. And there, I do remember one section of the book where there was this dark room, and somebody was sitting in a dark room and being tended to. And that was one of those people who needed extra guidance and attention. So yeah, I don't remember what the person was, whether he was a Nazi or something like that, but he was evil on this planet, and he came to the other side and he was received, but then he went into this room and had to be dealt with. So it was not all milk and honey for him. Right away, you know, you still have to learn the lessons and maybe even be reincarnated, sent back to try again.
And when we talk about the life review that we hear so often about, it's one judging themselves, not being judged by others, but seeing for themselves the harm they did to others, magnified, you know, 100-fold. So they're punished by having to revisit their horrible deeds, but now it's put on them that they're feeling what they did to others, and that must be pretty harsh.
Yeah, there seems to be this consistent theme in all the literature of self-judgment, as opposed to being directed, you know, here and there. We sort of place ourselves among like-minded people. So, you know, maybe as Tom was talking, you know, the people that did a lot of evil things, like, you know, a Nazi, might be with other people that were of the same ilk in the physical world and have to be rehabilitated and, you know, with love and compassion, but it takes them a longer time, as we know it, to get to where they want to go.
You know, along those lines, too, not as horrendous as these despicable acts, but I believe it was also talked about in Testimony of Light. People who live their lives here in the physical world, pretending to be something they're not, find themselves in those groups on the other side where all the facades drop away. So I can't think of any, like, conceited or obsessed with money, pretending not to be to their friends and people who know them in the physical, but all of that drops away on the other side, and you find yourself amongst the same. I mean, maybe they enjoy that, but if you're faking it here, you will be found out. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Love you, Bob.
Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying that. But I mean, when we talk to, so we talk about reincarnation, you know, and as Tom mentioned, and reliving lives. So do you think it's possible that somebody that was, you know, a miserable SOB, you know, in their last incarnation might have been a warm and compassionate being in a previous life, and they're just kind of rounding out the cycles, you know, to get all types of experiences?
I thought you were going to go the other direction, that they were miserable and then they came back and were a wonderful person. I would hope that that's the case. I hope you progress even in reincarnation. I hope you don't go backwards.
Yeah, right. That would be tough.
Yeah.
Unless one's meant to experience everything and it's not how they behave, it might be more how they react. So somebody who blows up here and, you know, takes it out on somebody else now is calmer, gets the same perhaps abuse, verbal abuse, but they react differently. So maybe it's more about changing our reaction to things.
Mm. Gary wrote in that he was listening to a podcast with a person that had a near-death experience who wrote a book. I don't know if this individual name was Sebastian Junger. But he talks about while in emergency surgery, seeing his deceased father speaking to him and letting him know that he'll help him cross over. Junger noted that seeing someone from the other side in those moments is a universal experience. And he wanted to know if we could talk more about that. And also, he's, you know, this gentleman described himself as a stone-cold atheist. Well, one thing we know is that being an atheist seems to have no bearing on how you feel afterwards, you know, either in a near-death experience or when you cross over. But you're right. It is one of those, you know, seeing deceased loved ones on the other side doesn't happen with every near-death experience, but it happens with a great many. So it does seem to be somewhat of a universal, you know, experience. The part of it that is interesting that this person said that he saw his deceased father speaking to him and letting him know that he'll help him cross over. Now, if his father was helping him to cross over, then how was he resuscitated and come back? You know, so I don't quite get that, except that maybe the father was saying, look, it's your choice, but if you want to stay here, I'll help you cross over. But yeah, if it's your choice to return, I'll help you with that too.
That makes more sense, I hope.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I've heard both. I've heard where you get to the other side in a near-death experience and they tell you it's not your time and they send you back. But I have also heard what you just said, that they give you the choice. Do you want to stay here? Do you want to go back? And I'm not sure where I read it. But recently I read that and they said, well, how could I not want to stay here? Because it's absolutely beautiful. But then they got to thinking about their family and their children and that sort of thing and decided to come back.
Yeah. Must be a tough call, right?
I mean,
yeah. And we also hear from many experiences that they're told it's not their time. They're sent back. Yeah. They get resuscitated into this world of physical pain, and they're pissed off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, really. I mean, they wanted to stay in that beautiful place, you know. So, but again, it goes with it wasn't their time, and there's more stuff to teach and learn.
I love that we don't really know all the answers to these questions, because what would be the fun of that?
Yeah.
We don't want definitive.
Sometimes, I mean, it seems like the more we learn, the more questions that we have. So yeah. Sometimes I'd like to have more answers, but in due time, I'm patient.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I don't know who I attribute the quote to, but there's a quote that I've known where somebody says, "The more I know, the more I learn, the less I know."
Yeah, well, that's certainly true in my case.
But what we do know, Bob, what we always hear from the mediums, everyone wonders, are their loved ones okay? And yes, they are. Where they are okay. They're doing fine. So I hope people will trust in that, because that's what we hear time and time and time again.
And when people say, well, he's gone to a better place, they're right. Most of the, like you say, most of the NDEs, when they are sent back, are annoyed because, wait a minute, it was much better over there. You're sending me back to this?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, experiencers have, a lot of them have a really hard time navigating their life after they come back, because they've seen the other world.
Yeah.
And this kind of doesn't, how do they integrate that, what they've seen and what they, you know, and then going through this physical life. So, but then a great many of them also change their physical lives for the better. You know, they get less materialistic, more compassionate, more empathic, and work for the greater good. So that tells you it's not their imagination if they're changing their whole life based upon one experience, right?
Yeah, and it makes me think of our friend and former volunteer, Robin, who had a couple of NDEs, and she would talk about it, about how feeling the love, the great love. And when she came back to this plane, she was looking for that love, and was frustrated because she could never find the love that she felt when she was on the other side.
Yeah.
A tough act for any guy to follow.
Kathy wants to know, is spirit always with us years after their passing? Yeah, I mean, I think we all believe that that bond is always there, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible that the person in spirit keeps advancing and it gets harder and harder to communicate, but that love bond never dissipates. You know, it's an energy that just, you know.
That's right.
It always stays, so... Yeah, I think that they're always with us. And maybe they're always with us not only through our physical life, but when we're both on the other side, and even when one of us reincarnates. So that, I guess that sort of answers that.
Yeah, there have been many medium readings that I've witnessed where a grandparent will come through and talk about we were holding this baby that it is now here in the physical world. So yes, I think that the love bond and the spirit will be there throughout your life and after.
Mariah wants to know, what are ways you would recommend to grow spiritual awareness or help strengthen the connection with the other side, even if you're not wanting to connect with a specific loved one, but just work with spirits that have crossed in a way that is helpful?
That's an interesting question. I think Tom's probably going to talk about meditation.
The meditation, that's the number one. Means, yes, you quiet your conscious mind, and that puts you on the plane to spiritual connectivity. And so meditation is definitely the tool for that to happen, and also to facilitate that, setting intentions before you meditate. Set out an intention, or even when not meditating, when just in life in general, setting an intention for yourself of where you want to be in X amount of time, and put it out there into the universe that this is what you would like, and it does happen. It happens for you. It takes a while. Don't wait for it to the next day or anything. But when you set an intention in motion, it makes a difference.
You know, a lot of people do that in their careers. They create vision boards of things that they want to bring into their lives, or where they want to be at a certain point. And it's a similar thing, that you focus on specific things that you want to bring into your life and manifest it. You make it happen for yourself. That's pretty powerful. It takes a while. Usually people will say, you know, they try this, but then, wow, one day it's like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what I've been focusing on, my intentions.
Yeah, there's an author, Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote a book studying successful people and what they do to try to figure out what makes them successful. And almost to a person, that setting your goals and even writing them down, putting them on your mirror and looking every morning, you look at your goals. I know there's directly Jim Carrey, when he started out, he was living in his car in Hollywood before he got any work. And he wrote himself a check for $20 million. And he looked at that check every day. And then within about 10 years, here he was in the movies getting paid $20 million to do a movie. So it does happen.
All right. As soon as we get done with the show, I'm writing myself a check.
How much?
I'll go 25. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, along those lines, the next listener sent an email, and she's talking about personal experience, and she says, after reading the book Signs by Laura Lynn Jackson, which changed my life, I began to receive so many incredible and undeniable signs from my late husband. So part of it is believing that it's possible, right? It goes along with what you were just saying, Tom. You know, just it's not only getting into that state, but being in that frame of mind where you're receptive to it. So evidently she was not able to get signs, and then she read this book all about signs and communications, and they started coming. She says, the first one came right after his death. He sent me a selfie from heaven. It was in my photo roll, and I could see his side of his face and his nose. This picture was not in my camera roll the day before, because I was constantly looking at pictures of him. I knew what I saw, that she was sending me a picture from having let me know he made it to the right. I don't know. She attached a selfie to the email, but I didn't open it up. On the first Valentine's Day without him, I asked him if he could send me a sign. And that morning I found on my driveway a frozen heart-shaped leaf. It was incredible. He sent me the sign I asked for, a heart on Valentine's Day. I also documented this, you know, as well. And the last one, she said, on my first birthday in July 2022, my sisters and my friends went to Manhattan to dinner at a restaurant my husband and I went to often, and to catch a Broadway play. When the bill came at the end of the night, our waiter was named Jeff and his table number was 18. This was a clear sign from my husband, Jeff, whose birthday was on the 18th. He was saying, hey, babe, I'm here with you. It was so incredibly heartwarming to know my husband is still with me and gives me these incredible, sweet signs.
That's lovely.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, her name's Rita, and she also went on to talk about things that we hear a lot, you know, license plates and so forth. So these things are around us all the time if we can recognize them.
You know, it often happens. I find people want to share their photos, and it's often difficult for others to see what they're seeing. And it's almost like maybe don't try to share the photo. Just take it for what you see it to be. And if it gives you that feeling, believe it in your heart. But maybe don't try to get validation from others, because it might lead to disappointment and starting to question, oh, was that real? I see that time and time again on, there's some Facebook groups that people are always posting photos and, oh, do you see the, you know, the shadow over there? And it's so disappointing to read people's responses. So
yeah,
and believe.
There's always there, and there are always going to be naysayers that'll, even if they see it, they won't acknowledge it because you know, they think it's not possible.
It scares them. That's the thing. We are so taught a certain way, and unfortunately taught that this stuff is hooey. So you can't believe in that. So if somebody shows you evidence, it goes against the grain of everything you've been taught. And if you were to accept it, you have to throw out the ground that you're standing on. All of a sudden, you thought you were standing on solid ground with your beliefs. But if your beliefs are not right, that's very scary for a lot of people.
That's right, and even for scientists, you know, that's why you know, Dean Radin talks about the woo-woo effect, you know, that's prevalent in the scientific community. So yeah, you're right, Tom. I mean, fear is a factor. Why, you know, because look, ever since we were children, we were taught that everything can be perceived only through our physical senses, and if it can't, then it's woo-woo, you know. So
right.
You know, it's hard to break that mold, you know. Our patterns in our brains get wired to think one way. It's hard to break through, you know, break out of that. You are listening to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. If you had a question, you can reach us at 888-627-6008. We had a question. If everyone reincarnates, does that mean that we are all immortal?
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah, our soul is eternal. It's the life energy. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. So yes, whether we reincarnate or not, we are immortal.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I guess immortal can mean a lot of things. You know, I know there's a common thought among the spiritual community that we have this constant progression as we move closer and closer and closer to enlightenment. And then at some point, as the Eastern religions, you know, believe, we reach true immortality, you know, and we kind of blend into the greater consciousness. But
actually, I want to nitpick on semantics here.
Yeah.
We are eternal, but immortal means that we don't die. We do die, but we don't disappear. We are eternal beings living a mortal life.
Right.
And then again, we only physically die.
Right.
Yes. So, yeah, you're right. Do people in the next life see patterns that we don't see? In other words, do they make the synchronicities that we encounter? So, yeah, so by that question, I guess, you know, what they mean is, are they putting like seemingly separate events together because they can see the pattern developing, like they know we're going to be someplace at a certain time? So we call it synchronicity, but may they be manipulating that?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that totally. And yes, they do see more than we see. I mean, there are humans that see more than we see, you know, who can see auras, and you can see somebody's aura, and we can't, at least I can't see anybody else's aura. So I imagine that when you get to the other side, that you can see more than, a lot more than exists here.
But the word patterns throws me off. Is it like setting up events? Are we talking about sequence of events?
For example, if you see a cardinal land on your windowsill and you go, oh, well, that's a greeting from my mother on the other side. I do think that spirit can put electrical impulses. They can definitely, electricity is something that spirit can work with. So they can flicker lights. They can put a little thought into a bird's head that I'm going to go land here. A lot of things like that, that you look at it and, or, you know, even the song on the radio where you go, I was just thinking about my loved one, and here comes that song that was their favorite song. I do think that can be orchestrated from the other side. And in many, certainly in a lot of mediums will say there are no coincidences. So if you say, well, that's an interesting coincidence, you say to yourself, oh no, it's not, it's a message.
But do you think that people in the spirit realm can see future events that are going to occur in the physical world?
If it falls under that category, I was just thinking about this the other day, that I totally believe that Tom's dad orchestrated the meeting and then marriage of our daughter with her future husband. And it was, he never met the fellow, but shortly before he passed away, it's too long of a story to share right now, and I would not do it justice. I've written it down, and someday I'll share it fully, but that's how I feel. And I completely feel that way. And I'll just, starting with our questions at the beginning of our program, I recall taking my mother and my sister to a reading with one of our certified mediums. I've told this story before, and she did readings in what used to be, I think it's called an esthetician, where she would do facials and things. And I was sitting in the other room because I did not want to be part of the reading, but I got to hear it all. And at near the end of the reading, I hear and first of all, my mother and my sister were extremely skeptical and discounting almost everything this poor medium was sharing. And I knew them things that they were denying that were true, but you know, that was their way of handling all this. So near the end, the medium suddenly said, Kevin, who's Kevin? And I'm in the other room thinking, my daughter's dating a Kevin. And I hear my mother and sister say to each other, we don't know any Kevin. Kevin, who's Kevin? And my mother says to the medium, well, who's telling you this? And she said, well, he's telling me this. And it was just, you know, so exciting for me, because I didn't know that their relationship had maybe progressed to that level. But as we were leaving, I said to my mom and my sister, you know, Kevin, that's who Marin's dating. And my mother said, oh, she was just reading your mind. I'm me sitting in the other room, not even a part of all of this. So it was really kind of funny. But yep. And the rest is history.
Yeah. So I struggle with it sometimes. I wonder if those in the spirit world actually, you know, try to affect things in the physical world, you know, like future events, or whether there's a hands-off policy, because it's part of our learning, you know, process.
Exactly. I was just going to make that point, because we are talking about, sure, spirit can do this and send you a sign and you know, affect the outcomes and that sort of thing. And so I'm sitting here as a listener going, oh yeah, well then why don't they come and help us when we really need help? And you know, when we're struggling, that's when we really could use some help in that regard. And what you just said, that we're here in this physical plane as a learning experience. It's basically a big test that we're taking, And sure, the spirit on the other side that knows all the answers to the test could give you all the answers, but then you wouldn't learn the lesson you're supposed to learn. So it's a balancing act. You can't have it all one way.
It's like being a parent. I mean, you could tell your child absolutely everything they needed to do to get to a certain point, but what would they learn out of that? So it's better picture.
This really relates to what we were discussing before, but I was just thinking of it as my mind was wandering. But last week I interviewed Dr. Mona Sabani, and she's is a neuroscientist. So she spent a whole career studying the brain. So she knows, everything, about the brain. And she, because of her education, was totally closed off to all these things that we're talking about. But yet, and she writes about this in her book, what's so interesting is that she's of Persian descent, and her mom was well known in the family, was unbelievable at reading coffee grinds in a cup. And she was amazingly accurate, even like Mona would calculate it, like statistically, like how accurate she was. So it was so funny to me because here she didn't believe in any of this stuff, but she was fully bought into those coffee grinds, Of course, later the evidence led her to totally flip her her educational, background. I mean, obviously she still believes in the scientific method and so forth, but she totally believes in all these experiences, that people have. So interesting.
Isn't that a good example of what we were talking about before? The fact that she was probably young when she saw her doing this with the grinds. So she accepted that. And it was part of her knowledge before she got into the science world that told her that can't be possible. But she saw it, and so it didn't throw her.
Right. You're right. So sometimes experience is more important and powerful than research, because you've witnessed it. We had a question, what's the difference between a ghost and an apparition?
What is the difference between a ghost and an apparition?
The way I understand it, there is no difference. It's just semantics. I don't particularly like the term ghost because it's attached to fear because of the media, it's something to be, it's spooky. But essentially, a ghost is a visitation from a loved one.
Yeah.
It's an apparition. So it's conscious. So it's a conscious entity. It's like,
yeah,
so,
I could make a difference.
Yeah.
Talking with Lloyd Auerbach, who has studied haunted houses and that sort of thing, and, where you went into a house and there's a woman sitting in the rocking chair that'll get up and walk across the balcony and then come back and sit in the rocking chair, and that's it. There's no interaction. To me, that's an apparition, that you can see a spiritual impression rather than some, whereas a ghost can communicate with you and is...
Yeah, it's my understanding that apparitions do that too. What Lloyd talks about is he explains what you're talking about, more like place memory. So energy, I don't know how to describe it, but energy gets implanted or affixed to an environment and stays there.
Yeah.
And so the woman back and forth, you can't communicate with, it's just part of the place memory, whereas a visitation, look, we all have, I shouldn't say we all, but many people have these dream visitations where the person in spirit appears to them and you could talk to them and have a conversation, So, I think there is a difference, but it's all very complicated. And then You know, I mean, Lloyd also talks about poltergeists, which is a whole other story, you know. But scientists have traced back that back to like some sort of heightened energy of an inhabitant of the house, usually a child that has this intense.
Teenage girls, apparently.
You know, could be the psychokinesis, the movement of objects.
Lloyd will say that television program Ghosts, that I think originated in Britain and now there's an American version of it, he said that's exactly what it's like. He said, watch that show, and that's exactly what it's like with entities in a home. So take that for whatever it's worth.
Let's take a call. We have Andrea from California. Hi, Andrea.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us.
I have a little story. It goes back to you were wondering, you know, does spirit affect future events? Do they meddle a bit? And in a recent reading I had, my husband in spirit mentioned, I have a college-age student or a college-age son, and he mentioned that he calling in favors when my son started looking for jobs, and that he would make things happen by calling in favors, was how he put it. So it seems like there's a little, you know, they can meddle a bit if they want to.
I love that.
Yeah, definitely. And then with Melissa's story about our future son-in-law, that my father had a hand in that, I agree with that totally.
You know, there was a time where my daughter had a reading with one of our mediums, and she was estranged from her, Tom's her stepdad, and she was estranged from her biological dad's family, and the grandpa on that side of the family was coming through to apologize because he hadn't seen the bigger picture of what was actually going on in the family. And he said he was going to make it up to her. And my daughter didn't know what to make of this, but simultaneously, my daughter and her husband, Kevin, were living in a little apartment in Philadelphia. And for some reason, their landlord kept forgetting to cash their checks. So their bank accounts were growing. And I immediately thought of what the medium said. You know, that maybe in-law was helping the landlord get a little distracted.
Yeah. Well, one thing we know, I mean, people in spirit, I mean, their most important goal is first and foremost to let us know that they still exist, and two, to assist us whenever they can. How many times have we heard stories of discarnates communicating through mediums, giving them information about where to find something, you know, like a will or to solve a crime, you know, and so forth. So, I mean, it's clear that they see, as Tom alluded to, you know, have a much broader perspective than we do in the physical world. You know, how far into the future they could see, I don't know, but they certainly do everything they can to help us.
Andrea, does your son feel this? Does he feel any, like, doors opening for him?
You know, he's not there yet. He still has another year before he starts searching for a job, so we'll see.
Let us know.
It would completely make sense. And it was interesting. I've had a couple of readings, and the most recent one, my husband focused on our three children, but it was all more kind of what will be coming for them in the next 5 years. Mm. So it was much different than earlier readings with him. But
yeah. Unfortunately, you have to wait the 5 years to find out if they're right. But it certainly gives you some information.
I know it'll be like one day. Yeah. Wow. You know, you're seeing something that's unfolding. It's like, wait a minute. I was told this was going to happen. That's cool.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling, Andrea.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for listening. Okay, thanks for taking
the call. Keep track of all of these doors opening.
Oh, I will. I definitely will. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, take care.
All right, you too. All right, here's a question. Do people tend to believe in an afterlife more when they get older?
out of necessity, I guess.
My mother did not. My mother raised me to believe in all of this. And then as she got closer, you know what it was? I think when you get perhaps closer to the other side, it's like you want to be reassured. So her technique would be to sort of put it down and then wait for me to go, but wait a minute, you know, this has happened and this has happened. So I don't know.
Yeah, it varies, of course. And some people, even when they get older, they go the opposite way and they say, there's nothing, and they're just prepared for nothingness. But I will say that in recent years, I've noticed that people my age, the baby boomers, as we're getting closer to, to our physical deaths, more of them were joining the foundation, not because they lost somebody recently, but because they're curious about their own mortality. They spent their whole life not thinking about it or discounting it. Now they're getting older and say, well, let me check this out and see if it's a possibility, because now they're thinking about it, you know. So
right. It's always interesting to me. This has been such a part of my life, this belief. And then, of course, being a part of Forever Family Foundation, that sometimes speaking to people and the topic might come up, and it always so surprises me when they say, well, I've never given that any thought at all. I was like, what? I mean, this is all I think about always. And so it's interesting to me that it just hasn't entered people's realm of thinking.
Yeah. This question has to do with what we were just talking about, but if you're fearful of things that cannot be perceived by your physical senses, are you less likely to receive after-death communication or visitations? For the most part, I'd say yes, because if you're fearful of it, or you don't believe in it, then you're not open to it, so you're not going to recognize it.
Right.
On the other hand, we do hear a lot of accounts that people are fearful or shut down to these things that have these spontaneous occurrences, you know, that happen. But for the most part, I mean, I from my own experience, I mean, I could say that I was one of these people that, you know, that did not believe in anything beyond our brain or our physical senses. So there were tons of things that were happening around me that my brain would say to me that's not possible, so I discounted it or I never even recognized it. You know, and then after I became open to it, much like that woman who read the book about signs, you know, then I started recognizing things. So there must be something to that, right?
Yeah, and there's a story that we've heard that some woman who was missing her husband who has passed and, you know, wanting to see him. And then one night she's in bed and he appears at the end of the bed and she screams and goes, get out of here. Don't you ever do that again. And so, you know, that's where you go with that.
That's the story I was going to share. And you know, and her daughter who told us that story, my friend uses that example as why she doesn't believe, which makes no sense at all. Because she gives a perfect example of her father materializing at the foot of her mother's bed and her mother screaming and saying, don't ever do that again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I told the story before about a woman who came to our retreat once and many, many years ago. And I was having a conversation with her and I asked her, I said, what would it take for you to believe that your daughter still exists, you know, in some form. And she said, you know, Bob, if I saw my daughter, then I would believe. And then I didn't see her for like 10 years, and she came to another retreat. And she came up to me and she asked me if I remembered the conversation that I had with her. And of course I didn't, you know, but she told me the story again. And then she said, well, I saw my daughter, you know, and she said, I had just woke up and I was just like staring at the ceiling. And then I felt a sense of presence, and I looked, and standing at the foot of my bed was my daughter. And I said, wow, what happened? And she said, I got scared shitless and I started to scream and my daughter left, you know. Oh. So here the woman's been waiting for 10 years for a visitation. A daughter in spirit finally figures out a way to harness her energy and manifest in physical form to visit. And she scared her away. But that goes to Tom's point about fear, you know. I mean, it's so hard to, you know, to even though intellectually, you know, when it happens. And how many times have you been talking to people, your friends, or people you'll come across, and you'll tell them a story, and they say to you, oh, that would have, you know, scared the hell out of me, right?
Yeah.
That's the reaction, you know. Or you're talking to somebody and they say, oh, you're giving me goosebumps.
What do your friends say when you try to share these stories?
Oh, they put their hand on my knee and they go, Tom.
are you drinking again?
And we just said, one day you'll find out.
I said, you know, I'm not here to convince you, but just let me tell you, you're in for a surprise. Yeah.
We don't have much time, but there's one that says, you know, do you think that some people avoid going to a medium because they don't want to make their grief worse if the medium doesn't connect to their loved one?
That could be true.
Possibly. I mean, there's plenty of people that we have seen that get a reading, a very powerful reading, and then they come out of it going, yeah, but I wanted to hear from this person and not that person. So it's, we have grief retreats with 50 people and not all 50 people get read. That's and right. Then they have this feeling like, well, my loved one doesn't love me because they didn't come through. There are a lot of that kind of thinking that could deter people.
Yeah. I don't think that people avoid, I don't think they think that far ahead. I don't think that they avoid going to a medium.
Unless they've been.
Because expecting the connection not to come through. Most are very hopeful that a connection will. But a lot of people go to a medium, don't get a connection, don't get a good reading, and then they do feel worse. So, I mean, that's why we're so protective about mediumship, you know, and we want to see a practice at a high level because we've seen countless cases of people who have been tremendously helped in their grief by an evidential reading. But every once in a while, it's not a guaranteed process, and it doesn't happen, and they, you know, they feel terrible. So it's a double-edged sword. I wish it was more reliable than it is, but yeah.
That's why we always explain to our groups ahead of time to listen to what everyone else is getting. And there's, you know, there's messages in it for you too. And if it really is happening for these others, enjoy that for them, because if that's possible, that spirit is connecting with them, your spirits are there too. They might not just have that link with that particular medium or not be ready with the skills needed.
Okay, I think our time is up. I'll read our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
Now I'd like to say, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.